You're listening to episode 63 of Good Social Podcast. Thanks so much for joining me again for another episode of Good Social Podcast. Today, my guest is Craig Mack. Now, Craig is a social media strategist from here in Sydney, and he is really quite active in the Australian Community Managers group. If you're in that group, you'll probably have come across Craig's posts, and he's always sharing a lot of insight on social media and sharing ideas there and joining in the discussion there, which is such a wonderful group. I highly recommend getting in there if you're a community manager or you work in social media. Craig actually shared a blog post that he wrote into that group, and that's what sparked my interest and wanted to get him on the podcast today. The blog post he wrote was a recap of social media use during the bushfires here in 2019-2020 here in Australia. Now, these bushfires were the largest that we've ever had. To give you an idea, there were more than 12 million hectares actually burned across Australia. Now, to give you that in perspective, I was looking up countries that were around about 12 million hectares, and Germany is just slightly under 12 million hectares. It's quite a large area. Now, 5.4 million hectares alone burned in New South Wales. Now, to give you a sense of the scale of these fires compared to what a normal bushfire season is, typically 300,000 hectares burns in New South Wales, and this was 5.4 million during this season. So it was really, you know, an enormous bushfire season that we had, and it really affected everyone across the whole country, and specifically really severely some communities who lost their whole homes and towns were wiped out. Everyone in the whole country was feeling these bushfires, and that was replicated in social media. Social media use throughout the bushfires was enormous, and it was used in so many different ways. Craig's blog post really looked at the different aspects and really dove deep onto what was happening. Now, I'll share a link to this blog post in the show notes if you want to check it out, but Craig is about to join me, and I'm really excited to get him on to just really have a discussion about what this, about his blog post and about social media in this time, because I think it was a really important time for social media, and I think it was another example of how social media can be used as a tool for good. So Craig is a wonderful guy. He's a really great social media mind. It's a pleasure to have him on the podcast. I'm really looking forward to this episode. He really dives deep into the blog post and about the bushfires. And we even talk about, towards the end, we even have a bit of a chat about his shoe collection and even that he's part of sneaker groups on Facebook as well. So if you want to hear about that, you'll have to stick around till the end. But I had a great chat with Craig, and can't wait to bring you this episode. So let's get started.
We're more connected now than we have ever been before. Social media hasn't just changed the way we communicate, it has literally changed the world. Join me as I seek out the good stories made possible in this more connected society. You're listening to Good Social Media Podcast with Todd Austin.
Craig, thanks for joining me today on the podcast. Really excited to have you here, and I wanted to talk about, well, I guess the idea of having you on came from a blog post that you had written after the bushfires here in 2019 and 2020. So can you tell us, well, before we get into that, can you tell us about yourself and what you actually do?
Yeah, sure. Thank you for having me. It's kind of really interesting to talk about the way that it was used, because it was quite different in some ways that were surprising. I've been in social for about 6 years now, and I'm a freelancer, do social media strategy and content, a bit of influencer work, and I teach social media as well, and about 50,000 other things. I'm a model on the side and an ambassador for IOIK from a mental health side. So I've kind of got my hands everywhere, which means that I like kind of researching and getting in. But the teaching I find really helps with that. Which is part of how this post kind of came about.
For a lot of us that do social media, is that you might do it for your strategy or whatever for your day job, but these other aspects of it flow into your life where you, I guess when you're passionate about it, you look for the other ways that you can kind of discuss it with people, help people, or even, you know, help educate people as well.
Even just for myself, like I think I have about 10 different half-written blog posts from things I've started to research and then either lost steam on because it's gotten too big or something, gotten distracted with something else. But yeah, it's all of that, like my own knowledge for one.
Yeah.
But helping other people. And like particularly lately, I found with all of the scandal around data and the government app, like the amount of misinformation in there.
Yeah.
And conversations that I've had with people just about actually what goes on.
Yeah.
Is amazing.
So you wrote this in-depth blog post sort of recapping social media use throughout the bushfires. Before we start talking about it actually as well, can you tell me what made you write it?
It was seeing so much content and so many different stories come out. And then I think it was when the fundraising started happening and that really picked up that I started thinking, oh, what are the other ways that, or how's this being done? Because it will be interesting to see. And it was quite a positive use of social from what I was seeing as well. People were really supportive. There was a lot of fake stories and fake news that were coming out. And a lot of the times people were coming back with facts and information to fight it, not just arguing with each other and telling, you know, I'm right and you're wrong, which normally happens on social. So it was things like that that were just surprising that made me want to kind of dig into it. And then the more that I found, the more that I wanted to dig, because there were just some really interesting things that kept coming out, or ways that I hadn't seen it used before.
It was, I mean, social media exploded then. I mean, and when we think about what we are now, I mean, we're in May of 2020 and there's so much more has happened since then. It feels almost like it was years ago, but there was so much happening on social media from so many different angles. It was really one of those times where I think social media was doing its best work. But at the same time, there was, you know, a lot of negativity coming from social media as well. And it was, you know, it was just being able to, I guess, being able to sift through what was happening to make sure that what we were collectively being informed about was important. And you mentioned in your post that that a lot of the other publishers, BuzzFeed and those types of things, were publishing articles about challenging the fake news articles or debunking them as well.
Yeah, and it was the first time that I'd really seen anything like that, where you had ABC and SBS and BuzzFeed, as you say, and I think Wired and Vox and a whole lot of different publishers were coming out and, you know, listicles of stories that were fake that I hadn't seen. Normally it would be, you know, one story on something, or it would just leave it and concentrate on something else. So I found that really surprising, and the detail that they were going into as well, yeah, with what was wrong with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just really, that was one that got me.
Social media is a really interesting place. And I guess Facebook is probably the main one, I think, certainly for us here in Australia, where between 15, around about 15 million active users on Facebook. And it's a lot of people, when you kind of look at our complete total population. We have information, news and whatever fed to us through the news feed. When you're being bombarded by information there, it is easy to get caught up in the misinformation and that's that kind of thing. And because when it's crafted in a way where it can be attention grabbing and it can kind of demand that people actually take it on board, it is good to see that not just the Facebook as a platform working against fake news, but other publishers as well, taking it on board and really putting a lot of effort into saying, hey guys, you know, that's not right. It's good to see that the responsibility for ethical content, you know, on social media is not just held by the publishers or the users and the platforms. It's being spread throughout everyone that has the ability to be on social media. So it was a good, I really enjoyed that section of your blog post. So it was good to see you highlight that.
Thank you. I think it's really important. Like it's a, fake news is so easy to fall into because some of it is so well written or so closely written to facts that it's hard to identify. And I think because there's so much content fed to us through not just social, but radio, TV, everywhere, it's information overload, and it's easy to just get caught in the momentum. But one of the things I kind of teach my students is critical thinking, and you know, it takes maybe 5 minutes to check something that you see as to whether it's real or not. It doesn't take that long.
And I'm
kind of in the habit, and I'm trying to teach more people of you just have to check. And take a bit of responsibility, I think, particularly in situations like that. It's really interesting how that's extended. So with everything that's going on with COVID and Facebook and Twitter and Google, Microsoft, and one other platform that I can't remember, collectively have made an agreement on fighting fake news and stories together, which is like that's never happened. It's you're just seeing this growth where starting to take a bit of responsibility for it. It's still a long way to go. It's not just leaving it all out there.
I think the thing is we hit uncharted territory when these big things happen. And social media is only 15 odd years old sort of thing. So it's like each year, each kind of major thing that happens globally or each even little thing that happens on social media or in traditional media as well, they're kind of realizing these things happen for the first time and then having to adapt and evolve to make sure that they continue to kind of do good in the world.
Yeah, it's learned. It's like, it's funny you say that. Like I've said that to quite a few people recently. Like this is, it's new for us, for this generation. Like I don't think the world has had to sacrifice or kind of compromise on to the level that we have for decades, maybe since like World Wars. And platforms are only new. They're basically kids when you look at them. So of course you're going to learn and you're going to make mistakes along the way. It's like you can't do everything perfectly, and it's all refining. And with each generation, behavior changes, we learn more, what you accept and what you don't accept changes. And I think people forget that.
They're learning from their mistakes and they're trying to improve, and they are doing it. So, and there's a couple of things I think in your article that address that as well. And I'm sure that one of the points you'll probably bring up, I think, but social media, I guess it does so many different things, and certainly for the bushfires, and you illustrated this in your blog post because I think you had seven or eight main aspects of what it does. Is there one that sort of stood out for you, or maybe there's a couple that stood out for you in regards to the bushfires?
Look, it was all so different, and it was probably the first time that collectively all the platforms were working in very different ways to deliver the same kind of message and engage everyone. And each platform used its own strength in that way. So you had TikTok and people mainly taking the piss out of Scott Morrison on TikTok and that kind of fun content there. But there were also things like Australia Zoo doing videos on animal care on TikTok, kind of reaching that younger audience, but it was a bit more TikTok relaxed. And then like on Facebook, and it really showed the power of Facebook and that no other platform is caught up to where that is yet. As much as everybody keeps talking about, Facebook's dying and young people are leaving and it's declining. It's the most powerful platform from its features and its functionality. And that was one big reminder from things like using location data through mobile and working with the RFS to give real-time data that the RFS then overlaid fire tracking to work out where where the biggest risks were and where the resources were best kind of spent to minimize waste and ensure that there wasn't a huge loss of life and property and as little as possible. That I found fascinating because everybody talks about data and, you know, collecting data is bad and the platforms using data is bad and it's always evil. And it isn't. I think there's a lot of kind of paranoia around that. Like, people took 1984 far too seriously. It's one version of it's a dystopian future. But that I wanted to highlight because it's a really positive thing. And Facebook kind of does that in disasters all over the world. It works to help and works with governments and other agencies to add to all of the help and care and keeping people safe. And everyone just slams Facebook. So that was really fascinating for me because that just didn't even occur to me that would be going on. And then you had content as well. What was interesting was the difference between media and news and brand content and what people were saying and what people were doing and the more personal content. So you had these two really strong streams telling the same story, but from two completely different angles. So you had sort of the more informative, not even, I think, sensationalist from the media. It was pretty fact driven compared to now. Some of it gets a bit sensational. But you had, you know, the stories of the updates and the fire tracking and where this was at and a bit of, you know, what the potential impacts were and, you know, a little bit of let's hate Scotty going from there. And then from people, you actually had like personal stories and what it was like in the middle of the fire while your property was burning down. That I think was one of the most impactful content that was going around because it was sort of easy for, you know, me. I live in the inner city of Sydney and fires were horrible and we could see what was going on. But really the worst impact for me was, you know, my house was constantly filled with smoke from the Blue Mountains. But I wasn't in the middle of the fire. So seeing people from their properties or abandoning or talking about what it was actually like made it feel real and really brought out the devastation of it. And then the fact that was going all around the world was just fascinated me the way it was engaging everybody. And it was just people sharing their lives in this horrific experience that was going on. I think there was, and they were all, everything from like powerfully emotional from just sending you broken down into tears from, you could just see animals like after the fire had gone through. There was one video published by one of the pubs in one of the regional areas and he was just driving down the road and at first you kind of couldn't see and there was just animals bodies lining the road down the field and you could just looking at that, it was like, yeah, they had no hope in this fire that ripped through. So it was that was like horrific, but really meaningful through to the kind of beautiful stories as well.
Generally, and with traditional media, the cameras and that sort of stuff shows up after the event has happened. And we've had some really severe fire seasons before. But we'll only see footage of the aftermath, which is horrific, and you can see that there's been some really tragic, you know, scenes and tragic things happen and loss of life and that sort of thing. But I don't think that we've seen to this sort of scale video and photo and stories coming from almost the moment. And, you know, one of the first videos, I think, that you've got in your blog post is the video where the rural fire service are at the front line of a fire and it literally just explodes in front of them and they back off and it happens within seconds and the flames are like higher than the trees. And I must have watched that video a couple of times when I first came across it, and it almost doesn't look real. It is that, and you can almost feel the heat from from it as yeah. well. It is just terrifying.
Yeah.
And it's imagery like that that I think that was able to spread on social media to show how actually bad it is, how bad it can be, how dangerous it is being in the Rural Fire Service, and how brave they can be.
That was, I think, maybe the first video that just really brought it home for me, because you know, you sort of see it and it's hard to comprehend. When you see the skies that are bright red and there's fires everywhere and you know it's horrific, but like that video, every time I watch it, I've watched it so many times, and you feel it go right through your body. Just like, it's frightening. And it was that sort of content. Even there was one of the an influencer in Byron Bay or in that area who was live streaming as he was abandoning his property that was burning down around him, and telling that story and showing what it was actually like having to leave and how quickly it happened. It's hard to understand that unless you're actually there, and that's exactly what the content did.
And I think the other thing I wanted to touch on that you mentioned was Facebook's data for good. Now, I didn't actually know about this until I read your blog post as well. They work with governments during these times to help them fight against whatever the crisis might be. And in this time, it was the bushfires, and they're working together, like you mentioned before, with other data companies against COVID-19 as well. So the thing that you highlighted was that there is data collection has this kind of, big brother sort of overtones on it that we're all frightened of, but data can be used for good. And they've branded that one well, I guess, Facebook. But it is really great to see that they do have the ability to help, and they are doing it where and when they can. Oh yeah, and I mean they have other features as well that mark yourself safe if you're near a disaster zone or something like that. So they do have a lot of those features that are there, which I think a lot of us kind of maybe even take for granted, because they slip in and out quite easily, and social media has become so engrossed in our daily lives that a lot of the things that happen on it we just don't really bat an eyelid now. The features are things that sort of come to us, but there's a lot of features that are there available that are, specifically to help us connect in these important times. And I think that's something that doesn't get celebrated enough.
No, I think we trivialize things like that. The safety check-ins, I think it's really easy for people to trivialize that. And I've seen it in people like slowly getting out of the habit, thank God, where they'll be nowhere near the area, but checking in just because it's there and it's funny.
Yeah.
But that's not what it's for. And that's all that we see. There's so much more that goes on. Facebook have worked, they've been in the mudslides in China that have gone on, and when earthquakes and, in other disasters, to work to keep people safe and use all of the things that they have to be able to do it. It is good. I think it's what it shows. I think people think, my data is my data, and they're tracking me, or it's really personal. And it's all just what they're looking at is the numbers. They're not really interested that, you're going to McDonald's at 2 a.m. after falling out of the pub. No one cares. It's sort of about the numbers, and the way that they highlight it and use it is I think really positive and powerful, but nobody wants that story.
So we kind of touched on this before, I think, but the first-hand videos and stories I think really really shaped the narrative of what was happening with the fires. Like we talked about that video, the scale of them, the devastation and then the impact on human and wildlife and even environmental as well. There was a lot of misinformation coming at the same time. What are your thoughts on the value of the personal stories and the first-hand accounts from social media coupled with traditional media and how it can be amplified there? And then the potential that this sort of stuff can be manipulated?
It's so easy to manipulate. There was one really good example, the NASA image that an artist then built on or kind of designed, and had it on there that it was an artist's image, and it was for Australia, and it was showing kind of the scale of where fires were all around.
Yeah.
And as people started to share it, it got taken out of context and then watered down, and then was suddenly being presented as something it wasn't. And that didn't need to be, like, all the information was there from the beginning.
Yeah.
But I think the personal stories, like traditional media news, you get sound bites and you see, you know, this much of the day. And it's usually with news when the fire's rolling out or when it's rolling in, or, you know, other media have stories that you read, or it's a little bit deeper, but it's all focused on kind of one thing. Whereas what what everybody sharing content does is give the big picture. So you had one of the videos that made me cry, another one, was the woman rescuing koalas who were running around from her, running away from her as she was trying to rescue them, and further into the fires. And she was just chasing them and taking them straight to vet. So no, I don't think any news reported on that. We kind of heard about it a little bit, but you know, that one person doing it then sort of started the momentum of other people doing it. And that was kind of, there was another thing that kind of saw one person would share one part of a story or their version, and then that would get other people going, and you suddenly got the full picture, or that, no, it wasn't all horrible and, you know, the entire forest kind of exploding around you in seconds. There were these other really beautiful human real moments that were going on as well. So it wasn't just about the devastation, you know, kind of how the families got out, and how they stayed safe. We'd be hearing those stories, whereas what we normally hear is the panic and the disaster and how the emergency was managed, not we're fine, we've got out of here, now we're doing this.
Yeah.
I mean, the problem, like, there was a couple of the images that were going around, and this is where fake content looking so real is a real problem. There were images from previous fires that people were sharing, which, I mean, they looked real. I don't know whether that sensationalizes it or it kind of, I don't, for me, it didn't take away any of the story, because I guess I just assume that that's going to happen anyway and people are going to sensationalize it. And so I think it sort of comes down to us. Like, there's only so much that platforms can do to stop fake news. There's so much content from publishers, from individuals on so many different platforms, on so many different things. It just can't all be monitored. And so I think there's a level of responsibility, I think, or thought that people don't take that we should. It's just kind of, we know not to believe everything we read on the internet, but we'll share it anyway.
Yeah.
Exactly. So
yeah,
just it takes 3 seconds to check. Like the conspiracy theories that were going around made me laugh, and just the way when you actually read them, like, there was one around, I think it's the Australia 2030 strategy that just kept popping up. And the whole theory behind it was the bushfires and the trail that it followed. It was all a government plan, and they were like burning that track out because that's where high speed train lines were going. And that's where, you know, this strategy showed that towns were being built all around, and it was all a government plan. Along with everything else. And it's like the evidence that's presented, you look at it and it's like circumstantial patchwork.
But
people don't want to see that.
Well, that's, I mean, I think humans generally want to form connections in things. And that's what the people that are spreading misinformation really, you know, drill down into, is that if you can form the loosest connection between something and present it in a crisp video, it can actually do that. It can actually manipulate someone.
If you don't question it, I think people want to see something else. I think, you know, they're looking for the other story or what's being hidden, or like there was some conversation around, oh, what's going on while the fires are happening? What are we missing?
And it's
that's what's going on. We're not missing anything.
Yeah. I think what you mentioned about the woman chasing the, you know, koalas to rescue them was really interesting, and that the fact that inspires more people to do that sort of thing, and that real sense of community that I think comes out of social media in general times. I think, you know, a lot of us are kind of with our immediate communities. We might be part of community groups on Facebook or other social media platforms. But then in these bigger times where we're affected by, you know, something like the bushfires or obviously this pandemic, that community grows so much larger than just your immediate area. It can take up your whole state or your whole country and globally as well with what we're currently dealing with. And I think that the content that gets shared, like that video or, you know, like the story about the woman saving the koalas, is so important to inspire other people, like you said, that, yeah, I can make a difference. I can do something. I live near an area like that. I can go and help. And that's another thing that I think happens so organically on social media that it doesn't really get highlighted as much as it could or should, because we take those sort of things for granted. We have the ability to broadcast to, you know, the entire country, the entire world, from the device in our pocket. And in turn, we then are able to see someone do broadcast from the other side of the world so quickly and so easily. So we have a lot to thank for social media for giving us those tools, you know, to use. And I think that when crisis like this, the bushfires happen, we do see a lot of that stuff coming through, and really it is very important. And like I said, you know, that's what this podcast is about. It's to talk about those types of stories, to make sure that we're remembering them, we're you know, holding them up where they need to be.
And it did show the power and the good, like the fact that there was a sewing group in, I think, Denmark it was, making mittens for the koalas that had been burnt out of whatever material that it needed. But their entire community were knitting and sending these things to help with like burn recovery.
Yeah.
And engaging there. And that's the other side of the world that has kind of nothing to do with us, but that's how they wanted to get involved.
Yeah.
And from the donations, from fundraising, that was another power of Facebook. And it's probably the first time that fundraisers or Facebook fundraisers have really shown every other fundraising platform up. There were 200 countries the donations were coming from. I think probably over 250 actually. And through Facebook donations, it was just really easy to put the money in and you're done. It wasn't, oh, which platform works in that country?
Yeah.
And which service do I donate? Like, I just don't know. It's all too hard.
Yeah.
That made it really easy from the way that we're connected. And it was like, oh, well, if that person I know trusts them, then that's someone I can donate to.
Yeah.
And so that was another way that we were connecting. Even I think I was on Twitter, people were asking, you know, where do I donate? And I was chatting to, if anyone watches Charmed, the woman who played the grandmother on Charmed. I was chatting to her at one point and helping her. So I'm like, cool, I'm now a Charmed one. helped her kind of get a donation through. So it's like little things like that were really surprising. through to the like the mittens, through to just how it engaged the world, and it just shows it's not all bad, it's not all evil, and we spend a lot of time on these things, but it can be used for good.
Social media, I guess, reaches so far into our communities, and the platform, like we were just sort of discussing, provides so much for us, you know, for free essentially. But in turn, they do make a lot of money from it as well through advertising. But in saying that, do you think that they are doing enough? And I guess maybe I'm talking about Facebook here as well, because they're the biggest and they're the most prominent in Australia here. But do you think they're doing enough as far as giving back to us in these sort of times, or in the times of crisis and in general as well, providing help and support?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because we kind of spend our lives online. There's a responsibility across a whole lot of different areas, from crisis to everyday to mental health, and those kind of crises as well, that people are looking to Facebook to not only support but to help stop. Instagram is being criticized for causing a lot of mental health issues and a lot of self-image issues, and then not doing anything about it. So off the back of that, Facebook built the Instagram wellbeing team, which then that in turn built a whole community hub and looked at what resources were being provided and how easy it was for someone to seek help or to even report somebody who they saw was at risk or was acting badly. So like over the last couple of years, Facebook's been and Insta have done so much work on improving all of those kind of personal crisis tools. It's now, you know, if you think somebody's at risk of, say, suicide or self-harm or going through some issue, not in a reporting way, but you can report that through to Facebook now, and they subtly, I don't know how the process works, but they get in contact with the person with some resources and help, and really subtly. So there's a lot of work going on in there, and that's constantly going on. Then there's the Data for Good project, and there's, you know, always emergencies going on worldwide. So I think they've got their own kind of development and profit and money to make, and they don't do everything perfectly. I still struggle with Facebook's, well, you know, we're just going to publish everything and it's up to you to work out what's fake news. Like, there's some of it that's really obvious, make it go away.
And that's interesting too, because that's just been quite, I mean, prior to COVID-19, there was in the end of last year, the big discussion in the US about the platforms, the major social media platforms allowing political advertising, and Twitter banned it completely. Where Facebook are still allowing it. And, you know, so that's an ongoing thing that's happening. And, I kind of, you can see both sides of the coin there. They don't want to overly censor things, but then, you know, maybe a little bit of censorship is okay.
there's a great clip. I think it's about a 5-6 minute clip. With AOC in the US, just grilling Mark Zuckerberg over political advertising. And just asking him a really simple question of, can, if a Democrat wanted to, could they advertise the incorrect location of polling booths to people and the incorrect day of the votes and encourage people that to do that, to disrupt voting? Like, technically, yes. They came was the answer that he didn't want to give, but it was kind of obvious in everything that he said. So things like that just shouldn't be able to happen. It's like there's still a lot of work to do, but it goes on. Whether they do enough, they probably do a lot more than what we think. To be honest, like I know from presenting at a conference with the eSafety Commissioner here in Australia a couple of years ago. I had no idea, and Facebook kind of regularly works with federal police, international police, government agencies all over the world, tracking criminal groups, things like sex traffickers and people, people smugglers and, you know, pedophile rings and kind of money laundering and drug rings. And they kind of use all of their data to help track and capture and collect evidence and break those rings. And we don't know any about any of that.
Yeah.
But that sort of goes on. So there's that kind of good as well, which is why I'm also thinking, you know, if collecting data, if that's what gives you, like, I know I'm not doing any of that, so I've got nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
If you are doing that, that's I suppose when you've got to worry that they're tracking you personally. So there's all of that good that goes on. Yeah.
The short answer is they are working to help, but there's always more to be done. And I think that they know that. And I think that we have to remain vigilant and always never accepting that enough is enough. You know, there's always more opportunity to demand that they can do better. And
yeah.
And you know, I think they've proven that they're active in that area of help, of actually giving back. And I'm sure that we'll see, you know, more. I'm sure that there'll be more developments. There's always more to do.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting with even just the fundraising. So look at the difference between GoFundMe and Facebook. Like, so GoFundMe has like a 15% commission or charge on whatever's fundraising. Like, they take that. Facebook takes... During the bushfires, there were none. They, like, on any donations for anything, they weren't charging any fees. But they're like, they're minimal fees in comparison normally if you're doing a fundraiser for someone's birthday or whatever it is. So it's kind of those things to make it more accessible. It also keeps people in the platform. But we're getting more out of the money that we're spending on there or giving than on other platforms. So.
Yeah, and I think you hit the right note there. It's they want to keep people on the platform because that's what keeps their business going. But people aren't going to stay around if they feel like they're being shortchanged or lied to too much or even overly censored. You know, so there's a balance that they have to find, and it's an ongoing journey. Oh, so yeah, with everything that happened during the bushfires, there was so much content. And I mean, it went on for months. It was the longest bushfire season that I've known and by far the worst. But there was so much content, you know. What were some of the most memorable moments for you? And I know you touched on a couple of them as well, but, you know, they don't necessarily have to be, I mean, they could be good or bad or funny or you know, what were the most ones that stuck with you?
The project being called out by the other media and the public and with their he's not my prime minister moment.
Yeah.
You know, as the show promo, that was the clip, and then the actual story was like not that at all. You know, the reasoning came out, but the way that they'd sold it, a totally different story. And sucked everybody in, and like, you know, I think everybody cheered. It's like, yes, he's not mine either, and somebody's saying it to him.
Yeah.
And then it, you know, came out really quickly that no, they'd manipulated and made this completely fake story out of something, and were called out like collectively.
Yeah.
Like, that was great. That was really surprising as well. And you know, they weren't allowed to get away. With that, they were kind of held to account that, no, like, don't pull that crap.
Yeah.
Just use. That was one that really stood out. A lot of the memes and the GIFs with, you know, Scotty from marketing, and just the ways that people were venting their frustration, and you could see it, but having a laugh with it at the same time. Like, I imagine it would have been quite difficult for him and the party.
And his communications team probably.
Yes. Things like that were just, it was so Australian that, like, we're just going to completely take the piss out of you. Rather than, you know, get on and completely slam. If the way that events kind of came together and kind of took all of that online frustration that you saw, created events around, you know, the protests that were happening and around other movements, and took that to the streets, you know, the role in doing that, which I found really interesting because no other platform has events in the organization to be able to do that. And it's where from teaching, I know everybody talks about, you know, younger people aren't on Facebook and they don't use it. And they're definitely declining and they use it differently. But it's part of the people who are in that group.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in a ridiculous amount of like sneaker groups and Lego groups on Facebook, and like particularly the sneaker groups are a lot younger.
Yeah.
So it's like they are actually there. You don't have to believe the story, but it just kind of proved that audience was there, and how the two worlds were sort of connected through that. Yeah.
One of the things that I thought was really great, just to sort of go back to what we talked about, was the community groups or people organizing events or drives to get supplies to the RFS, yep, to the volunteers, was pretty incredible, to a point where so many people responded that they had to like say, please stop sending things. We've got too much now. That's how effective it was. So, and then how much people were inspired to give as well, how many people actually gave. So, that was probably one of my most memorable things as well.
The different ways that groups were being used as well. So there was, they were used from everything, communities themselves that were on the move and being burnt out were setting up Facebook groups so that they could communicate really easily and clearly and not have to worry about, you know, mobile reception calling 15,000 people, and you know, families were setting up Facebook groups for the same reason, so that, you know, so they didn't have to be on the phone all the time. They could just kind of do one update and everybody saw it. Then there were groups like there was a tradies group that set up a sort of help for those who needed it from a building and a rebuilding perspective. But this group calling Australian Tradies for Bushfires or something like that, that was set up within 10 days that had 12,000 tradies kind of members in the group who were all offering to volunteer their time and their services to people who needed it. And then that was being used to connect them with, you know, people who needed them in their areas, through to, you know, RFS had groups for sharing content and staying in touch. There were other fundraising groups. There was just everything, and they were used, just the diversity in how that one feature was being used.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Even some of the influencers and what they were doing. What I found most interesting with influencers was sort of the tipping point with fundraising. Pink's donation of $500,000 is probably was the tipping point, I think, because people had donated before that point.
Yeah.
Like Russell Crowe had, you know, raised, you know, a couple of $100,000 through a raffle or something like that.
He auctioned off the hat or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the Rabbitohs hat. That's right.
Yeah.
Auctioned it off. And that was at the end of November. And so there was kind of fundraising and celebs were doing stuff through all of December. You had Bette Midler on Twitter. Was hilarious. She was really active about the bushfires on Twitter all throughout. It was fascinating. And it was, I think, Pink's donation in early January. It was that one that then all of a sudden it's like, okay, all the celeb money started coming in and just like rolling. So it was just interesting of that tipping point of, you know, right moment, right following, did like the world had been like sucked right into the story. And then, that's what suddenly like donations just flew. So influence there, through to you had another influencer on Instagram who is all about body positivity anyway. and was like selling nudes for $10 each for fundraising, and raised $1 million.
Wow.
Unfortunately, like, Instagram ended up closing down her account, and there was a whole scandal around that. Like, I've just raised this much money, and it's like, it's bipartisan. Come on, guys, like, chill out. And then the question of that, like, if she's not doing it on her feed and in public,
and it's for a good cause, it's kind of, yeah, like,
and it's for a good cause. And like, that triggered a few other people to do something similar.
Yeah.
There were others who were being criticized for, we'll give a percentage of, or $1 from every product, or $5 from every product as a donation, which sounds good. And a lot, most of them were interpreted as just commercializing the bushfires.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just really interesting the way that different influencers were using their platforms, and even the way that people were reacting to that. Like, normally, we'll give a percentage of the product sale to something is a really positive message.
This
time it wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it just sort of showed how everything, like, whenever I'm talking to clients, whenever I'm talking to anyone with social and they ask a question, I'm like, the first one I always say is, it depends.
Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, there's about 50 dependencies in the question that you've asked.
Yeah.
And it, like, those situations sort of highlighted that.
You mentioned, just on a lighter note, you mentioned you're in sneaker groups. Is that, because I've seen from your Instagram that you have quite the collection of Adidas sneakers,
yes,
and just about every color of the rainbow.
Just about.
I wasn't aware that sneaker. I'm more of a Puma man myself, but I've got a couple of shades of Puma sneakers. So I might have to find out a bit more about these sneaker groups. But if you want to see, if the listeners want to see what I'm talking about, check out Craig on Toast on Instagram, and you'll find his extensive sneaker collection, which he's very proud of. I must say, yours are more organized than mine as well.
That's my OCD. My wardrobe needs to be color coded, and like, even my underwear drawer is organized and color coded. It's ridiculous.
So, just to finish with as well, I asked this question to some of my guests, and not necessarily related to what we've been talking about today, but what's the best thing you've seen happen on or because of social media?
Wow, that's a really good question. I think it's sort of opening up. It's the stories, and it's the what you can learn from it, and the way it's connected. It's sort of connected a lot, and we find out about things that we would never have known about otherwise. Like, so for me, like, the sneaker groups and the Lego groups are like perfect examples of it. There's people from all over the world in those groups who, you know, buying and selling, or just, you know, a couple of them are just sharing their passions. My friends don't care about Lego. They laugh at me for the, you know, the vintage growing collection that I'm rebuilding. But the people in those groups do. So kind of you get to have your passions and really share them. And buy stuff that you would never normally have to buy. Like, this morning on eBay, I had to get up ridiculously early for an auction to buy a piece from the 40s that randomly stumbled on that you can't buy here. But it's, you know, it's things like that. It's you can find out what's going on all over the world really easily. And the thing that is both good and bad, depending on how you use it, you can find out there can be too much kind of going on, and everything looks horrible and disastrous, but it's that thing of, if you don't know about it, you can't really do anything about it. You look at the climate movement and what Greta Thunberg was able to do was connect people on that message, and you just that protest rally, whatever you want to call it, that was done on the same day all around the world. Like, that would have been impossible to coordinate. without something that connected everybody.
Yeah.
So it's things like that that I think are its power.
A really good answer. I think overall, and a lot of the things that you mentioned, like we take for granted, you know, like, but social media actually has the ability to make the world a smaller place. And yeah, sometimes that, you know, a lot of times that's a really good thing. Sometimes it can be a bad thing. And, you know, when something happens like Greta Thunberg, there's a lot of positivity that comes from it as well. But then, you know, because it's, you know, it is the world and it's a reflection of society, there's always opposing points of view as well. And it really can sometimes awaken conversations that maybe we need to have in the world, and but we wouldn't have an opportunity to have those conversations if it wasn't for something like social media.
And I think it just like one thing with COVID and a lot of the content that I've seen, it just humanizes everyone, and it's suddenly not a far off problem, or it's not something that you can just stick a label on and forget about. It's like, well, no, there's actual people. This is how it's affecting them, or this is how they're we're all kind of similar in kind of many ways, or how we're so different. And like, diversity is what I think makes the world go around, and it just shows that.
I think we can agree that social media is we both are pretty passionate about it. I think it's pretty obvious, and it is doing some pretty wonderful things, and certainly. At a time like this with COVID-19, I think, you know, it's driven a lot of people to connect more, you know, and in different ways as well on social media. So, yeah, it continues to do amazing things, I think, week after week.
Yeah, and it's like it does it imperfectly, but we're all imperfect.
Yeah, that's right.
It's interesting. I read a stat, it was in one of the reports earlier this year, and the estimate was that all of us will spend about 100 days online this year, which kind of sounded reasonable. And now that we've kind of been locked up for however long, I'm wondering how much that's grown.
Yeah. I'm not going to show my screen time to anyone over the last couple of weeks. But look, you know, it's, I think that one thing that we can say is that, yeah, a lot of us have been spending more screen time and we've been using social media more and consuming more content and probably even publishing more content on social media than ever before, because we have lost the ability to connect like we would normally in, you know, out in the real world and physically, but we're able to still connect online or on social media. Because that's what I think we need as humans, and I think living in isolation has really proven that to us, that we actually crave connection with each other. And I think the idea of a global community has grown more over the last month or two, because we've seen you know, videos and things shared that have actually brought us together.
And it's a collective experience. I think it's first time that I can think of that literally the world, everybody in the world is going through the exact same thing.
Yeah.
I was talking to one of my friends in the UK and he was just going through something that was going on. And I was like, that was here last week, like, literally like step by step. Humans aren't designed to be alone and to not be connected. Like it just the fact that we've adapted to having cocktail parties by streaming.
Yeah. Is,
weird, but you know, that's how we're doing it.
Yeah, you would never have imagined if someone would have said, hey, we're going to have a video call for Friday drinks this week, you know, you would never have imagined doing that, but yeah, like everyone's, lots of people are doing it now actually. Yeah. I've got Friday drinks on this afternoon with a bunch of friends, so
there you go.
I'm looking forward to that.
It's interesting how that's just like, I found the like just a really simple thing in New South Wales, or kind of around the country, laws changed really quickly. So, you know, bars that started doing the, we'll make the cocktails and deliver it to you.
Yeah.
Like, the week before, that was illegal.
Yeah, Yeah. Yeah. But it was just a matter of survival for a lot of businesses to be able to do that sort of stuff. And then being able to, you know, use social media, I think, to actually get that message out. You know, I live in the inner west here in Sydney, and we're surrounded by small bars and craft breweries, and they've been all over social media as well, and using it in different ways to keep communicating and provide their service to the community, which, you know, craft breweries, they provide a pretty good service.
They do. It's the same here in the Cross.
Yeah.
We've got kind of bars and restaurants and just the way that they're serving food and still making their products, and, you know, it's and surviving and not being forgotten and doing what they do.
Yeah.
Very different way. It's, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting world.
Well, thanks so much for joining me, Craig. It's been really wonderful having you on, and really to get your thoughts on, you know, certainly, I mean, the fantastic blog post that you had written about the bushfires, and to just to hear more in depth about your thoughts about social media's role in that crisis. And it was, you know, really great having you on, and hopefully we can get you on again sometime and talk about some more stuff. I think really good to have a chat, and really appreciate you coming on.
Oh, pleasure, thank you. Anytime. There's so much to talk about with stuff.
You've been listening to Good Social Media Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review for me on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you're listening to your podcasts. Connect with me on social media at Good Social Podcast on Facebook or Instagram. I'm also on Twitter. And if you're really getting value from an episode, then take a screenshot and share it on Instagram stories. And don't forget to hashtag Good Social Podcast. Thanks for joining me, and I hope to see you again next time.